Hey everyone, welcome to the Talking Split podcast for episode 24. We're one better than Jordan, slightly the same as Kobe. I am Rob Calder, the coach development officer at Basketball Victoria. With me, I have the high performance coach for Vic Metro, Mike Zebel.
Robbie, good to see you today, mate. Very special guest on the pod today, Robbie.
Talk everyone, me through it.
Big treat today for everybody. We've got the high performance coach for Victoria Country, Mr. Justin Schuler, on board today. Justin, thanks for stopping by.
Everybody needs a little time away. I heard a say from each other.
I think it's a good time to announce my new solo podcast called Talking Split about Rob and Mike after your bagging last week. Should have sent out about the wonderful, nice, warm felt messages when I was dying of illness. And then I get told, listen to the first 3 minutes of the pod and see what you think.
Oh, wait till you listen to the last 3 minutes. That doesn't get a whole lot better.
Maybe I need to fast forward.
You may need to skip ahead.
Not real impressed with the lack of sympathy last week, but good to be back.
Great to have you too, mate.
At State Basketball Centre, so we know these ones are a little bit easier to get to for yourself as well. So.
And I would like to point, the amount of times I've travelled over the West Gate compared to some in the room is, I couldn't even get to that number of counting in my head. So
we know that, mate. We know that.
Disappointed I missed out on heading out to Werribee, and hopefully next time we can get out a little bit further to Country Victoria, which is Geelong. So
I reckon that's a pretty good guest, actually. Like, if we can get Dave Herbert on the pod from down at Basketball Geelong.
Put the pressure on him.
He does some great stuff down there. And for those of you that don't follow the Basketball Geelong Coaches Network on Facebook as well, that's definitely a good
one.
They do a great job. As do the Southern Penn guys down on theirs as well. So there are a couple of...
Country Roadshow might be the answer to this.
It's the country way.
Easy. So, same as always, please do email in with any questions or topics that you think would be worth discussing. If you can like, share, retweet, do everything you can do on the social media side when things go up as well, that would be fantastic. The more discussion we can have with the coaches out there, the better from our end. And hopefully it gives you guys something to listen to as you're driving around Victoria trying to coach everyone under the sun as well. So we don't actually have a topic today. We have been incredibly poor in planning, and it was mainly due to Justin's illness. We haven't really had a pre-production meeting.
Is that you and me, Zep, or is that Rob, where this is his sole responsibility to prep each week?
I turn up with microphones, and that's where my responsibility
Let's
ends.
Let's just see what happens in 30 minutes and figure out if he's planned this split kick extra properly.
I'll suggest no, but we'll see how that plays out too. So, real easy topic to start off with, so we'll banter around a little bit today and see where this takes us.
Bit of a mid-season review, Robbie, I would call this.
Okay, so... NBA playoffs and finals. So we've got Golden State, Cleveland again. So the fourth time.
Version four.
Deja vu-ish.
It is a bit. So first off, these guys have seen each other 4 years in a row now. A little bit of a different lineup from Cleveland, so certainly not the same thing. Is it
different
easier?
Different from Golden State as well.
Yeah, fairly similar. Like the main core is there, I suppose.
Yeah.
So at this point, is it easier or harder to play against a team that you play against so often in these sorts of things? Like, is it, like, how do you manage that?
I think any time it's a 7-game series, it's a challenge. Like, when you see, you know, what's and all, what's happening from the opposition, and it comes down to one-on-one battles. I think it might have been Zep at some point has said, you know, you're always back on the best player on the floor.
He did say that.
So, you know, that's where, you know, it comes down to Cleveland, Boston. Boston's system had been far better. Enjoyed watching them play a lot more, but the best player on the floor got the result on the day. In this series, well, who is the best player on the floor? Like, some would say it's Kevin Durant. Some will say it's LeBron.
They would be ill-advised, yes.
I would like to think that more talent would get the result and more of a team system would get the result. But, you know, I think any 7-game series is a challenge. It's a game of adjustments, not just basketball.
I guess where the best player on the floor argument or philosophy comes into it, where its challenges is when the other team has four potential Hall of Famers on it, who might not be the best player in the league, but just unbelievably good players. So that's going to be the challenge for the Warriors to do what they do. And then I guess how good can LeBron be? Because, you know, that's the common thing in the three previous meetings that they've had, is that LeBron's been awesome. Like, he's averaged 36, 37, 38 points, and half a dozen rebounds and a dozen assists, like whatever it is. And I guess how good can he be is going to dictate how this thing goes.
So we have, like, obviously the NBA playoff system is what it is, and you get East and West, and the best teams come out of each side and play off. But do you feel like we've got the best two teams in the finals?
It's kind of funny. Like, I was always hoping Celtics and Golden State from a style of play, like
coaching matchups as well.
Yeah, and to me that was going to be interesting. But you look at Golden State; they limp over the line. You know, arguably Chris Paul doesn't get injured. Maybe they're not in, and it's a one-on-one battle of sorts. But you know, Cleveland have got through the final into the finals against a team that didn't have their two best players available. So who knows? But one of the interesting things I saw was about Chris Paul and his injury, in that he'd been averaging 24 odd minutes per year, spike of load through the playoffs to around 36 minutes a game, and then ping goes a hamstring. So was the plan all year long to try and nurse him through? Was that the best idea, or should it have been a higher load to condition him for that moment in time? Then you flip and you look at LeBron, who's been averaging 38 odd minutes a game every game.
Played 40 in game 7.
Yeah, like huge loads, but seems to be able to just keep it going. And he's a freak, you know, once in a generation athlete. But, you know, little sort of thought process there for, we sometimes try and do the best thing for our athletes through the season, but then when it comes to the crunch and you need them to play those big minutes, they're not conditioned for it.
Yep. So where are you guys at with this man they call LeBron? So he has consistently now taken on an incredible amount of hate from people like Justin, who has put Michael Jordan, and respectfully, as the absolute pinnacle of the sport. And I would agree that he is still the pinnacle of sport. But where are we at with this guy? Like, he has surely proven over the last dozen years that he deserves to be at least in the discussion. Am I out of my mind?
No question. I think it's an irrational conversation always. Like, the people that grew up watching Jordan are always going to put Jordan first.
Yep.
The people that have only watched LeBron are always going to put him first. Like, what I actually thought was more interesting is people saying, is it Kobe or LeBron for second?
That was Kobe putting that in, though. Oh, did you see his tweet? Like, don't try and rationalize this. Enjoy my five, enjoy MJ6.
Yeah.
It's like, no one's talking about you at the moment, Kobe. Like, you're further down the list.
I think there's something in it that the game is very different. If people heard Bill Simmons' podcast with JJ Redick, and he was saying how the game is so much harder to play now than 10 years ago. You know, I think it is hard to talk from eras. Jordan, to me, is always going to be the best because he couldn't be beaten. I saw someone said, you know, LeBron's been to 9, favourite only twice. You know, Jordan was favourite 6 times. That's because everyone knew Jordan couldn't be beaten. Like, there's a reason for that. Mm-hmm. So that, to me, I think is what the separation point. But for us of our age in this room, we're just lucky we got to see both.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
massive.
Like, that to me has been a really cool thing.
And there's all the stuff you see on social media, like, oh, LeBron sucks. And it's just the most flippant, throwaway, dumb comment you can make, because LeBron is the furthest thing from sucking. You don't have to like him as a person, that's fine. But understand that as a player, he is amazing. Like, there's very few players in the league that can carry a team like his to a playoffs and finals. Like, we were all talking 6 weeks ago, they were going to be swept. Like, they went to 7 games against Indiana, 7 games against Boston. Yeah. Okay, they smoked Toronto. They always smoke Toronto. Yeah. There's nothing new there. But no one, I would suggest, thought this Cleveland team was making it back to the finals.
What about, though, from a coaching perspective? Like, does Tyronn Lue deserve some props with this? You know, he was out mid-year with an illness, and the team kept ticking along, and now has found himself in, I think, his third.
Second or third.
Yeah, like, he wasn't third, the first one, but you know, there's some pretty...
And he leaned on his assistants really heavily. Like, I heard him the other day giving all his assistants props for looking after that team while he was away. And, you know, as a head coach, it's your job to put systems in place so that, like, if something does go wrong, someone can pick that up and just keeps managing along.
Yeah.
And that's NBA level, that's, you know, international level, that's BJBL level. Okay, if you're not there, do your kids still know what they're supposed to be doing? Or... you know, do they need you there directing and telling them, hey, you need to cut here, you need to pass here? Like, it's, you have to have something in place for that.
Right, and so much of that is just managing the locker room. Yep. Like, for him, is just making sure that these guys are somewhat in a frame of mind where they can go and compete. And Cleveland, the amount of negative press they got and have received through the playoffs just for looking poor. And then I saw someone spoke out yesterday. It was Steph Curry at a press conference, said, like, how much disrespect is it for you to talk about LeBron's teammates in the light? Like, he's telling the media this. In the light that you do, that's so disrespectful. Like, these guys are good players. They work hard. They do nothing wrong. So, I mean, for Tyronn Lue, it's managing the whole thing and getting them to the point where they have a chance at three-quarter time in Game 7 to go and win that thing.
Well, Steve Kerr's the same. Like, how do you manage that level of talent? And traditionally, Iguodala is always playing, and he's been injured of late as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, Iguodala goes and gets the best player on the other team, and that's his matchup. And they've managed to get through a pretty difficult opponent in Houston as well.
And Steve Kerr is dealing with Durant, and Lou's dealing with LeBron. And you've seen at times this year both athletes dismiss both coaches. Like the way Durant dismissed Kerr through the playoffs in this recent series when Kerr got on him. That's what you got to manage. Like, you've got your star player who you're trying to tell to get the ball out of your hands. And they've got Kerr mic'd up, like, get the ball out of your hands.
But that's what I loved, is, like, he was not going to let the stud, perceived stud,
yeah, dictate,
stick to derail what was going to go on. Right. So, you know, I think Steve Kerr's whole approach to the season's been an interesting one and has clearly drawn on his coaches that coached him. You know, like, he owned it that, yeah, this is year four and it's a grind.
Mm.
Like, it is a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have that killer mentality and we're not going to pretend that we do. Like, most coaches that you hear would always go the other way and say, you know, like, try and bluff their way through it. I think that's been an interesting part. And then to still be there at the end of the race, like, now's really when the coaching's going to matter.
Right.
You know, who can hit the buttons, who can get Kevin Durant to not dribble the dots off it and move the ball, who has got a better scheme for matching up and figuring out a plan against LeBron or figuring out how to take the shooting away.
Mm.
You know, that's going to be, to me, the enjoyable part of this final series. It's actually not probably the basketball as much, but the stuff behind
it's
it.
Kind of what I was going to say. It's easy to sit back and just watch the game and enjoy the game, but look for the in-game adjustments.
Yeah.
Look for the adjustments between game one to game two. You know, how do they defend Curry? What are they doing with it? And it's kind of cool to sit there and take note. Like, okay, looking at the stats on this, they send Curry left off that on ball, but they'll send him right off a pin down. Like, look at those little tweaks, which may not mean a lot, but now you get to find out who's really making adjustments as well.
Yeah.
And you'll see a little bit more about rotations get shorter. You know, you mentioned about Chris Paul playing more minutes in finals. Well, it's going to happen. You know, that's their style of play. And even D'Antoni spoke about it after, I think, game one or game two of their series against Golden State. People are saying, hey, you guys dribble the ball too much. And he's like, have you seen us all year? Have you been paying attention? That's what we are. Like, and that's just as important. Like, it's in these sort of situations, do you be the proactive person that says, hey, we're going to change our lineup to suit what you guys are doing? Or do we sit there and say, no, this is what we are. Mm. You've got to change to us.
It's funny because you say that, because I've thought about, you know, if I'm in one of those chairs, what am I thinking about right now? To me, I'd actually be thinking more about my group versus their group. Like, I think it is one of those series where if you become just great at who you are, well, you're going to give yourself a chance. Yeah, and like, part of that is taking certain things away, but if you're not great at who you are, you got no chance in this series. So like, that is probably where I would be focusing the majority of my time, especially for game one.
Absolutely.
So what happens, and we can wrap this one up with this little point, Robbie. So what happens if the Cavs go out and win game one? Like, that's kind of the tone setter. So what happens if LeBron has a subhuman effort and they're able to pinch game one? That makes this really fun.
Well, it's not a series until someone loses at home.
Right.
Like, that's the old saying with it, I think.
Yeah.
And if you go and get that first one, and I think the Cavs have shown they can win on the road. Like, they got Boston in game seven. Like, you're not going to find a more hostile environment, I would have thought, than the Garden.
Right.
Like, that's pretty big. So I think they probably need to get one of the first two just to make it a series. I think if they go zipping two, they're in a world of hurt.
I think, though, if I'm Golden State, I don't even blink. If LeBron has a all-time game and gets one win, I'm actually expecting that.
Yep.
What I would be concerned with is if it happens back-to-back. You know, I think at most this goes six. Most likely it goes five. Like, Cleveland will get one game. In my opinion, I think Golden State are way too talented and with depth, and that's going to be the point of difference with it. So, you know, if LeBron comes out game one, no worries, mate.
We're making predictions. So, Cleveland, Golden State in five for you.
I'm saying Golden State reverse in five.
I'll take him in six. I think you're going to get at least one game where LeBron just goes nuts and gets it. I think you'll get at least one game where Korver or J.R. Smith gets off the hook, and you might get lucky with a Kevin Love half or a quarter somewhere where he just steps him over the line, but I think six. Mike, what do you got? I figured this was a preemptive question that you want to give out your tip.
No, mate, I was just a little Shula just went on and said in five. LeBron in seven.
Are you putting something on social media, like if Cavs win this and you retweet it, and I'll buy everyone a jersey? I saw that.
He is up for...
That's Bitcoin.
$20-something million.
Yeah.
That's...
You know how much he makes as a player? 10. Yeah. So, how's he doing that?
The thing with it is, it would take an all-time performance for that to happen. Right. You know, I think as basketball fans, that's what you're hoping for right now. That you see that, and it does go seven, and it's down to the wire.
And the narrative shifted a little bit. Like, it was always like, hey, LeBron and the Cavs are the bad guys, and, you know, this wholesome team in Golden State are the good guys. I kind of feel like the basketball public shifted a little bit, and it's like, no, you know what, we're a bit over Golden State. Wouldn't mind seeing LeBron put up some all-time numbers here.
The other part to it is we've been preaching develop the best player on the floor. That sells our argument, so... Get it done, LeBron, and we can keep selling our story.
Love it. Move us on, Robbie. Move us on.
So our esteemed leader, Grant Wallace, yesterday was listening to the radio and he's driving around town and heard a topic of discussion on SEN about AFL coaches and their attire. So thinking back to the 70s, I wasn't born then, and I know you two weren't either, but Grant tells me that in the 70s, when he was growing up...
He was a young 35-year-old
He was at that stage. Coaches used to coach in the box in like suit and tie, or like at least collared shirt, tie, things like that. We sort of started discussing it as well about, well, okay, what's that look like in the basketball world? Because now AFL coaches are coaching in polo shirts and slacks and things like that.
Mm.
Any thoughts around attire and what coaches should be wearing when they're on court, when they're in games, those kinds of things as well? So some leagues obviously have a dress code, but not all do. So what are your thoughts there?
It's an interesting one, Robbie. The polo and slacks is an Australian way. Like it's a cultural thing for us.
It's freaking awesome. I love that we do it.
It's how our community sports environment was kind of founded on, was the slacks and the polo, which is very different to how the US do it, where your high school coach will essentially suit up for a game. Your college coach is definitely the pros we know. Mr. Shula in the white and black shirt combination this year, all the way up in the pros. But I think it's a very cultural thing, Robbie. Right way or wrong way, I think it's just the way that we do things in Australia.
I think one of the things, and you know, talk at an association level, I think it's a Jordan quote, is like how you look is the first impression you'll leave on someone.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of, are you trying to run a professional program? Do you have uniformity, like, as in people walk in and they know where you're from and what standard is set, and is a, you know, they're a bit of a cultural point of that. The other part though is you need to dress for what, you know, you're doing. So you know, wearing slacks at practice where you're trying to get on the floor and get after it, absolutely not, but you would still think there's a team uniform you get into it. I can firsthand say I hated wearing a shirt in the NBL.
You look good then.
Oh, great, you rocked it well.
Great sponsorship through the men's club allowed us to do that.
No. Hang on. Until you start tipping anyone on this podcast, you can't go plugging their sponsors.
Because I don't want to discredit why we were doing it. But you know, for me, if we could have been in polos and a slack, I would have been a lot more comfortable in game. And to back Zep's point up, you know, like we'll go coach internationally and there's guys in jeans and sneakers.
I was just about to talk about that.
It just looks so unprofessional to me. And where, you know, the Aussie way has always been a polo and slacks, and it's something I'm proud to wear.
And national championships too. Like at our AJCs, I guess every state has the policy of a slack and a polo, a slack and I know some ladies have a button down. I've seen a slack and a button down. Like I think it's it looks good.
Yeah,
it looks good for what we're trying to get done.
I know when we've been in national championships and things like that, it was always first game of the tournament you wore the shirt and tie, and last game of the tournament you wore the shirt and tie.
You blokes, that's for sure.
It was a winning look. I think you'll find it was more than anything. Like, it was said, the great Paul Jones was the one that put me onto that.
Jones,
with the Letterman jackets, which you know. Depending if you were South Australian, they had the lovely mustard arms. Yeah. If you were Victorian,
I never understood
white ones.
Why we had that.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. But either way, I mean, that was always something. I don't know, from a VJBL level, you will very rarely see me not in shorts and a hoodie coaching on a Friday night. Like, I am the other end of professionalism.
Bill Belichick style.
I can take that.
But again, that's
a comfort thing for me.
It's a club uniform, it's comfort.
And because I coach under-12s, if I start rolling in slacks and dress shoes, my kids are likely to freak the hell out and go, what is this?
Robbie, you're sick.
You know, I've got to be a little bit more careful with that.
There is the, dress for the job that you want, not for the job that you have. There's that whole side to it as well.
I don't know that I wanted the 12-4s at the time of
evaluation. We will see how good they are next year when they're 12-1s. And then the other part is, so what I've seen the last couple of years being in the Big V, Ringwood, the coaching staff, are in suit and tie and jacket every game, all three or four of them. And I think they've won two of the past three and have won the regular season.
So if that's
the way that you view your program, and I'm assuming that the way they dress is how they take care of things administratively and in the recruiting process and practicing. So I guess it's a cultural thing on a club level too.
There probably are a few just don't go in that area type things. Like, do not be turning up to games or training sessions in thongs.
Yeah,
like no good straight away. Like that is not appropriate for a training session. People will have their own thoughts on hats. I have no problems wearing a hat. For mine, it's largely because I'm losing most of my hair over the years with coaching, so anything I can do to hide that is a good thing. But people have their own thoughts on that. Like, don't turn up in jeans, kinds of things.
The reality is, whatever the coaching director says, or the state high performance manager, or the CEO, or whatever it is, that's what you're in. But, you know, to me, Vic Country, you can't have your mobile phone with you in session. You're not wearing a hat. You're not wearing sunnies. You're not wearing flip-flops. Like, that's basically the rule. Outside of that, you've got your BBC polo on, and away we go. That's purely, again, about being on the same page, trying to build culture, all those sorts of things. I'm sure I know Wacko's got that out at Kilsyth. Like, every association's got the same sort of mindset. I think it's fine.
So when we start talking coaching attire and coaching etiquette, it's probably one of the other things that we talk about. I know I certainly address it in every coaching course I take. I certainly just touch on it a little bit, just some of the golden rules, I suppose. Like, when you're coming into your game, if there's a team already on that bench, do not go rampaging your under-18 boys over the top of those under-14 girls as they're getting off the bench. Just hold them back a little bit, let them clear their gear off, and then you jump in. Conversely, at the end of a game, do not have your post-game debrief on the bench. There is clearly another team that is going to be jumping in on that. Get your crew out of the way. There's always a corner of a stadium you can go to.
Sounds like you've been slighted often in your VJVL regularly days, Robbie.
Stuff I haven't thought about for years, mate.
Frankly, this is the only reason I have a podcast and pitch this idea of BV in the first place, is so I can vent my spleen on things that have annoyed me.
Love it.
And one of the other ones is, do not be interacting with the other coach down the other end regarding referees, because it can be a very volatile environment in games at the best of times. If you see the other coach down the other end talking to a referee about something, do not be jumping into that conversation and saying, hey, but what about, that's not your place. If you want to talk to the ref, you talk to the ref in your own time. But as soon as you get into a discussion about that, it's going to end poorly. And the worst one you ever see is, even that coach thinks that's a bad call, which starts a discussion, and now you're just throwing both referees under the bus, and that is not a good thing. Justin, you seem deep in thought on this. Yeah. There's some words coming.
The second the ball's in the air, competition is in play.
There we go, Robbie.
So
now we're talking.
There's a right way to compete and a wrong way to compete, and I think sometimes the right way can be conversations down the other way, interaction with officials. Like, it doesn't mean that I'm calling you out and, you know, degrading you, but I think things can happen in games. It's an emotional thing. You've got to be able to take care of it. Again, there's a right way and wrong way to do it. So, to me, you know, that's, you've got to understand where the line is on that, and don't try and get to the line. Stop well before it, but find a way to be passionate about what you're doing. To me, the etiquette stuff comes from, you know, be cordial before the game and after the game. Don't carry stuff on, or don't come in with a perceived mindset. Final buzzer goes, win, lose, or draw, shake the hand of the officials, the coach, like all that stuff. That matters, because, you know, how you carry yourself ultimately is how your team's going to carry itself. The other stuff with etiquette that really drives me insane in international events is, when you turn up to practice, you have your 45-minute allocated time, and the coach is continuing on with practice and pretending they don't know what time it is in that part of the world. I believe it or not, there's watches everywhere. So that thing is my win.
This is a little China, Team China.
But yeah, like that to me, and that goes at nationals. That'll go in, you know, if it's a classics event, whatever. You know, and just be respectful of everyone's there trying to do their part of their job. You know, when it's your turn, great. When it's not, get off and move on and be respectful with it.
I'll wrap a little bow on this one, Robbie, and just like be careful how you introduce yourself and your team to the opposing coach before the game, because we've probably all had that conversation or heard of a conversation where, you know, one coach may either brag on his team to the other coach, brag on his athletes to the other coach, brag on himself as the other coach or herself to the other coach. Not talking about Justin, but
I'll bring this one up. There's an interesting article written by the Siebel this week about a certain team looking forward to playing us because they want to win before the Easter break. So it's fair to say that the boys might be aware of that. We'll see what happens.
Thank you for hijacking my point. Where I was going was we've all been there. Like, just before the game, there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, shake hands, go, yeah, the guys or the girls, yeah, they're going okay. We got work to do, they're going okay. You know, good luck, looking forward to it. And you don't have to ever lead in with too much. You never have to sugarcoat anything. But if you just kind of call it as you see it, that's better than being completely over the top and overwhelming.
And it's the same with your kids too. Don't be sitting there before the game saying, hey, this coach sucks, or absolutely, their team sucks. Don't ever touch that. It's like, it's
quickest way to get a loss.
Exactly. Treat everyone with respect. Like, the last thing you want to do is lead your kids down that path, because you might think that coach sucks. Keep it to yourself. Ultimately, they're coaching and they're in the sport and they're trying to help out athletes.
Absolutely.
And you don't have to like every coach, but everyone is doing it for the same. I would hope everyone is doing it for the same reason, which is to progress the sport and the athletes.
Correct.
There are plenty of coaches we don't like. I sit in the room with two of them at the moment.
Oh, Rob.
Sorry, Justin, you had something.
Love it.
Never coached against you, Rob. So.
No, you haven't.
Move us on, Robbie. Move us on.
So, next topic we had was motivation of players and coaches. This is a rough time of year. Like, as we've noticed, those that have been doing the NITP sessions or working kids out early in the morning, is getting tougher to get out of bed. It's cold. It's rainy pretty much every morning, it feels like, at the moment.
Friday night, Robbie, 9:40 on the road, like somewhere away from home. Yep. Like, this is the like the dog days of the basketball season.
It is, and you're getting into the midpoint of your season as well from a VJBL perspective. Even the Big V and the Siebel leagues are sort of approaching that point. How do you keep your players motivated this time of year when your season might be going really well? You might be flying along at like 8-2 or something like that, and life is great. How do you motivate them? How do you motivate a team that's 2-8 and it's the complete other end of the spectrum and it's like, hey, we can't take a trick here?
Yeah. I think the big part of that, mate, is like how's the environment and the mood that you set every time that you meet with your team? Game day, practice day, like what is your mission? What do the kids know they're going to get every time that you're on the floor with them? I think that's really important. You know, I read a little bit, Robbie. At the moment, Phil Jackson's Sacred Hoops, which is an old one, but it is a good. Haven't read it before, but it was lying around the office, so I'm about halfway through, and he's just spoken about what his practice philosophy was with the Chicago Bulls, and it's kind of interesting to think about a practice philosophy. But he said in the book that his goal with every practice plan and every day that they were on the practice floor was to lead his athletes to a place where they found that intrinsic joy to play the game of basketball. So what they kind of grew up on, you know, on the playground, high school, even in college, that it was just the purity of the game. And how every day can he structure a plan, drills, meditation for him was a big part of it, mindfulness. How can he put all this together to lead them to a place where they're going to have joy in what they do? And I think that's carries over to every sport, every path of life, and under 14 girls basketball here in Melbourne or in Vic country. Like, how are you going to get your dozen athletes on the floor on a Thursday night in a dark, dingy, cold high school gym and help them find the joy of being able to play the game of basketball, which they evidently have shown to love?
Well, and trust and relationship is a part of that too. Like, if your players trust you, you won't have too many problems motivating them to get better. And whether that be early in the morning, late at night, whatever the case may be. Granted, sometimes your players don't want to check in, and that might be nerves. That might be, I haven't done the work and I'm going to get found out. that might be, I don't want to match up on that kid, whatever the case may be. Sometimes they don't want to check in, and it is difficult to motivate them, but you've got to put them in a headspace where, okay, I want to turn up because there's something bigger than just the win and the loss here. I want to get them to a point where, okay, we're going to try and get better. And if you're not on court and you're not working hard, well, you're not getting better. It's really difficult to push that otherwise. Is there anything you've used, Justin, with your players?
I just think motivation is an infectious part. Like, if I come in motivated, upbeat, hyped, whether our record sucks, whether the weather's crap, whatever it might be, there's more of a chance of everyone else in that building being motivated and upbeat and going. I guess this time of year, though, you do need to try and throw some different things. Like, if you're the coach that is rolling out a very similar practice plan every single time, mix that up. You know, like recently we took the guys and played some putt-putt, and just, you know, instead of a practice, not saying you need to do that all the time, but I know with United we used Friday morning warm-up as a soccer morning. Like, the guys would play soccer and just something different to... You know, the grind of the week at that point.
That was just on the floor, wasn't it? You put the cones out, soft soccer ball.
So figuring out some different things. Music, you know, in warm-up time, just to change the atmosphere in the building. You know, it's not minus 10 right now. It's actually warm and upbeat, and we've got some stuff. So, again, 100% though, I think it starts with you as a coach. Like, if you come in and you've got the cold, you're struggling, and... Like, I can speak to, you know, times that I've been crook, and I know that that's been
last Thursday around about 12 o'clock, I think, was one of them.
We try not to make fun of you, but rehash it. In all reality, if you try and... You're better off not actually being on site if you're crook, because there's no way that becomes a good practice. So having some things in place for that, all right, if lead coach can't be there, then tonight's going to be this sort of night, and... And just having some mechanisms around that right now is pretty important this time of year.
Robbie, the secret is, mate, athletes want to get better. So if you can tie everything to them knowing that they're going to show up at 4:30 or 5 p.m. after school and that they're going to get better and enjoy getting better, you're going to have motivated athletes.
No question.
Yeah, so I'll go with one more bit on that is... If you're result-driven solely to be motivated, then you've got serious issues. Like, it should be a process. Are we getting better? Are we working on X, Y, Z? Are we improving in this area? And it's easier to be said than done sometimes, but if you operate that way, your athletes will operate that way, and then there's less chance of a dip in motivation, in my opinion.
Absolutely. So how do you go when you have to go and do, like, the early morning session or the cold... And you,
lots of coffee.
There are plenty of people. There are probably plenty of places you'd rather be at times. Like, how do you motivate yourself as a coach to go and do those sessions?
Yeah,
I mean, for me, there is no other place that I'd rather be. So maybe it's a little bit different given my headspace.
Compared to you two guys who'll be singing Kumbaya
later.
But that's just part of it. Like, where is your motivation? Like, how do you motivate yourself, and what puts you into this realm of influencing athletes? Because at the end of the day, you are completely responsible for the five kids that are on the floor with you at that point in time. So you do have to... what motivates you, and Justin just said it, a really, really good point, is if it's result driven, there's such a dangerous place to live, as opposed to being process driven. And what are we trying to do? Like, I'm on the floor this evening with, 3 15-year-old girls who, my mindset going into this workout tonight is that I want them to be unbelievable 25-year-old basketball players. So there's like 10 years of whatever in between there. So what happens competitively wise on the weekend or school basketball is completely irrelevant. I just want them to work hard for 50 minutes tonight and feel like they leave there that they got better.
And that's exactly it. Like, you've got to trust the process. It's such a real cliche type thing too, but you can get a lot of small wins out of it, because it's really hard to turn up for a team practice where you may only have 8 players, 2 of them are on school camp, 4 of them have called in sick, and you're left with whatever that left, 2, 3, whatever it is. Not great. But it is really hard to turn up to those training sessions when it's like, hey, we've got 90% of our team missing. What are we actually going to get out of this? And I thought, well, that's a great time for individual skill development as well. You can get kids a lot better with one-on-one, one-on-two type training.
The masterful way to handle a morning session at 6 a.m. starts with don't hit snooze. Alarm goes up, you get up, you start your motivation at that moment in time. If you hit snooze, you're going to have a shit session that morning. There's no doubt about it. And that's something that I've always tried to have as a bit of a philosophy for me, that whatever time the night before I've said I've got to get up to go get to my workout, that's when it is. And then from that moment, it's about what do I need to do so when we walk in the door, we're ready to go. And again, it comes down to if I'm not motivated, they're not motivated. So there is coffee involved in that. But you know, whatever you've got to do on the way in, whether that's listen to music, get a talking split pot on, whatever it might be. But yeah, that to me has always been a big one. I actually think I got that off the former president. I heard that. That was their philosophy, and I thought if it's good enough for POTUS, it's good enough for me.
So, I love it. I love it. Hey, another book recommendation, just on Shula's last point, The Miracle Morning. So it's essentially exactly that. Don't hit the snooze button, but the 60 minutes after you wake up are essentially your most powerful 60 minutes of the day. And the guy that wrote it, the author's name escapes me, but he split that hour up into 6 10-minute blocks. And it's awesome how he, 10 minutes of it was essentially just waking up, drinking some water and stretching, like go through a stretching routine. Then it was 10 minutes of mindfulness, like just working, controlling your breathing. 10 minutes of goal setting, you know, where do you want to be at 10 o'clock tonight when I go to bed? There was 10 minutes in there of self-improvement. Like you spend 10 minutes and watch a clinic, read a book, whatever it is. But the way you split that 60 minutes up, really, really good read.
It's a good point. Like one thing I've always done, you know, forever now, I've had 6 or 7 a.m. workouts. So even if I don't have something on that day, I'm up at the same time, and then I'm actually going into the office at that time. Like I find that's the most powerful period of the day.
Means a lot.
To get stuff done as well, and just to have those thought processes for yourself where no one else is, the phone's not ringing, people aren't hovering around your desk, whatever. You know, get routine is a high performance product. Like if you've got routine, now you can generate success from that. So, you know, that's something else, a little strategy for coaches that may work for them.
Good job, mate. Robbie, move us on, mate.
So when you're getting up for these workouts, first thing in the morning, might be late at night, and you're doing the individual training sessions, what does an individual session look like? How long should it go for? What's the content look like? How many is too many for an individual type session? It doesn't have to be one-on-one, it might be one-on-two. When you're working individual skills, what are your thoughts around that?
Robbie, I'll preface this next topic with a little thought and discussion I had with a coach last week who might be a pod guest one day, Robbie.
Let me
and
know.
The discussion was around that we do live in a world now where every athlete is looking for somebody, a trainer, a coach, somebody to be on the floor with them all the time. And I think it's a dangerous place to be. Because definitely, you know, 15 years ago when I was a junior, you know, whenever Justin was a junior, however long ago that was, is how many times now do our athletes here in Australia are able to find a basket, grab a ball and themselves, and that's it. And they're able to just to self-toss the ball out, jump, stop, reverse, pivot, and then figure it out from there. And the reality is, yep, individual workouts, small group workouts are good. There is a time and place for them. But that isn't how a lot of players, today's generation of NBA players, yep, they might have come up through that. But there is a whole Europe, it would be full of kids that just have time to get the ball and just figure it out themselves. And I think that's something that can't get lost in this individual improvement and development.
To answer your question.
Thanks for that. I did ask it for a reason, and Mike's just taking this in a completely different direction.
I think there's really good points in that, like the ability to just get out in the backyard and muck around. You know, I think that might be a bit of a lost thing due to everyone being time poor or rushing from here, there, or whatever, too many games played or something like that. But to me, the individual concept, I actually prefer small groups.
Yep.
I think, you know, one, you're competing against someone else on scores, your work rates, you know, you got someone to match on, you know, 1-on-0, that I don't like it. Like, okay. I just don't. So
you can correct a little bit of technique, but that's kind of it. Like, you can only do that for so long, I think.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know with the workouts that I do with our Siebel group, you've often got a big, a little, and a wing. Well, there's ways to incorporate that as well. And everyone needs a bit of everything on that day. But So that part to me is, you know, small groups are great. I think if you can bunch them in guards, wings and bigs, that's even better. But, you know, maximising the ability to really get some high-energy workout going. And therefore, to me, that's where the length actually isn't an hour. You know, like, for someone to go flat out for an hour is pretty rare.
Yeah.
So, to me, it's the 40-minute window. You know, 50 is what I go because you have some downtime for warm-up and whatnot. But 40 minutes of just going flat out, that to me is a great individual workout. And you know, what I've found over time is that 45-minute window allows you more core time access, which then allows, you know,
more athletes
on the floor. So hitting a 45-minute high-intense workout, competing against someone, whether that's with individual skill or not, I think is the best case. I think
you're on the money. 45 minutes is great. And you've got to be really careful with your athletes too, because there are some athletes that are like a ball at a gate. They'll come off the on ball, they'll stick the pull up, whatever it is, they'll sprint after their ball, then they'll sprint back to the line and go again. And it's like, hey, just relax. Like, we want you performing the skill at game pace. That bit in between, you can walk that if you need to walk that. That's fine. If that enables you to perform the skill at pace, that's really what you're after.
45 minutes of form shooting, like, if it's not high intense, is still a lot of reps, you know? Yep. So to me, I think we always did an hour because that's what always was done, or that's what you could hire the court for, was for an hour. Like,
get your money's worth. Yeah,
so you kind of extended it, where when you look at what an athlete can actually produce in a small group environment, 45 seems to be a really good amount of time.
Roberto, I'll respectfully answer your question now.
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
The way I've structured this block of high performance workouts for our athletes, I've split the workout up into a few different phases. So the first phase of our workouts is going to hit on footwork and dexterity. So you got to be able to play with both hands, play off both feet. So a bunch of ball handling, one ball, two ball, footwork drills, reverse pivot, forward pivots, being able to pivot and bounce the ball at the same time, just little things like that, just to fire the hands and feet up. We move from there into finishing. So a series of finishing, we mix it up, a series of different finishes off different pivots on both sides of the basket, which it's interesting, like when we started now 4 weeks ago, very clunky and a lot of just missed layups, to be frank. And as the 4 weeks have gone on, particularly the young ladies, you just see them becoming more comfortable and catching and pivoting and finishing. So that's been really good to see. We move from there into a volume shooting component. So it just might be a short 8 minute of something, just a volume shooting, might be against the clock. It might be like the old school Olympic shooting, 5 minutes on the clock, catch and shoot threes, you know, six athletes or four athletes, two basketballs, you know, pass and catch and shoot. And then we're finishing the workouts at the moment with some challenges. And we've drawn up a few different challenges. It might be something like one ball, one shooter. So you got two working at the same time, 90 seconds, pull up threes. You know, ball out the net, you got to attack the top of the key at the other end of the floor, pull up threes. So we finish with a bit of a challenger just to kind of, you know, max out the effort, fatigue them. They'll take them all the way through to about 50, 55 minutes with four or five athletes.
I think the big thing out of all of that, though, is make sure you're tracking scores, makes misses, and make it challenging for them. Because if you do end up with a one-on-one session, which does happen occasionally, you need something to score against.
Well, part of that motivation we just spoke about is all of the shooting drills that we do have time, score, and record holder. You know, and we've done that with you know, MPP testing in the past. And you know, the athletes are starting to figure out who's on top and what score they need to get their name on the leaderboard. And that's going to be something that's going to be pretty prominent, because it is absolutely a source of motivation.
Every elite athlete needs someone to compare themselves to.
Right.
Because so you can see, all right, well, what is the, you know, highest score in what? You know, am I hitting the target? Am I, how many off am I? What does that mean per minute? Et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. Excellent. Interesting time of year. Obviously, a lot of tournaments going on at this point. Classic weekend coming up next weekend over the Queen's Birthday weekend.
Another Wadding tournament. Another Wadding
is on. I think Ballarat have got their junior tournament on as well, off the top of my head. What are some of the things coaches should be really thinking about in the lead up to this? Because they're about to go from the Chris Paul type normal workload to a massive spike in their workload over one weekend where they play for the Nutterwadding Ballarat tournaments. They're potentially playing 7 games in about 3 days. For the Classic kids, they're playing 7 fully time games in 2 and a bit days.
If not more, isn't it?
Yeah,
if they go the whole way, it might even be 8 or 9.
You play out in that one, yeah. So it doesn't matter. Like, you'll play the same all the time. But way to be across that too, Justin.
Yeah, it's been a while since I coached
it. Yeah. Any advice for coaches managing the load with the kids? Crickets.
You have to, you have to play in the tournament, Robbie.
I don't know that there is a real true way to do it because of the load. Like, the the reality is, it's not an ideal situation. But that being said, have a minute load in your head per athlete. Like, the thing that frustrates me with junior tournaments is when you're playing 6-7 guys and then the other 3 just sit there.
Yep.
If you're going to take 10, play 10. So straight away, you can find ways to, I guess, manage minute loads a bit more. Have recovery plans. So don't just let the kids, all right, now we're going down to Macca's and we're hitting that and there's nothing done with recovery. Allow adequate, stretching time, rolling time. Promote, use of hot and cold showers, hydration, bright sources of food, etc., etc. And then sleep's the other big one. And really, the week leading up to it is when the athletes need to just get into that habit of just trying to shut down and do all these right things so they have the best chance of getting through the weekend. And then the other part is for coaches as well. Like, coaches can be doing a lot of hours in this weekend. You're no help to anyone if you can't think straight. So, figuring out what does that look like for you. It's not pumping down coffees and getting that, allowing that to get you through it. It's all right, I've got my time frame, I'm shutting it down at this point in time, so I'm good for the next day.
Yeah, it's a rough one. Definitely got to look after your body athletically. And to Justin's point about, you're going to play 7 games, you got 10 athletes, there has to be a role somewhere across that weekend for all those kids. Like, that's part of your challenge as a coach, is you've got this full weekend of workload for your athletes. How are you going to engage your 9th and 10th player?
Well, and the other thing, what are you going to do? At this point of the year, you've had those kids for a long time. So if you haven't been able to generate that, then you've got to look at yourself and say, well, how come I haven't helped this athlete be productive for us?
Yeah.
It just happens too often. And I think, then the byproduct is we get kids breaking down, then you're relying on the kids that haven't played as much anyway. And now, that's when they'll get that opportunity. So having that plan going in, I think, is pretty important.
And absolutely. And you got to think about the lives that some of these kids, and we'll talk high-performance athlete for a second, or elite athlete for a second. We'll have athletes coming out of Classic to go and play at a national championships in 4 weeks' time. You'll have under-18 boys and girls leaving to go and play in World Cups.
20th of June.
So you're going to have a whole collection of athletes who have got stuff coming up. You've got to take all that into consideration, and for a lot of them, this Classic weekend will just be one of their 2 sports that they play as well.
Yeah,
and also the impact that has on parents and families as well. Like, people are giving up a long weekend to come to a tournament. You have to find a way to get these kids into the game, and that might be understanding the game time score and like, well, okay, hey, we're down 15 with 5 minutes to go. We're probably not getting this back now. When do we put the cue in the rack? When do we sit there and say, hey, let's just rest up for the next game? Do you start the same players every game? There might be a little bit of a variance on everything, but have a bit of an understanding of what your players are going through, and you can prepare them however you prepare them, obviously, in the lead-up as well. I mean, the hard part is coming out of those tournaments, what your next Friday night looks like. And for most teams, it's terrible. Like, you can normally tell teams that have gone well over a tournament weekend tend to be really flat that next Friday night. Mm. So what do you do with them during that week? Do you end up training them? Do you say, hey, we're having the night off? Do you go and do the mini golf thing that Justin was talking about earlier? Like, do you still get them involved but not put extra load into their body as well? So these are all sorts of things you have to manage, and you can do that with like welfare sheets. Just rate how you're feeling out of 10. Are there any physical pain? Because let's face it, kids are not always the fantastic communicators we hope they will be. How you feeling? Good is usually the response. If you can dig down a little bit more and be specific, how is your back feeling? It's about a 4 out of 10. Okay, well, we need to address this, and maybe we sit you out of this, or we monitor your load a little bit from there as well.
Yeah, and just thinking about my time playing at Classics, back like under 16s, under 18s, it was brutal. Like, you get to Monday night, and I remember distinctly asking Mum, "Do I have to go to school tomorrow? Like, I cannot move." Answer was no. One of the quickest no's. But I've shut down the NITP program until like June 19 for that very reason of there's no way you can just come straight out of a full-blown tournament and then back into some player development workout.
And also that lead up, like, you know, in respect to the clubs, they need access to those athletes for as much time as they can, all those sorts of things. So that's just smart. I guess the other beauty, though, the good positive part of the tournament is it is tournament play.
Yep.
You know, it's a chance to know margins, figure out which games you need to absolutely make sure you win. What, you know, is there some positioning that you're thinking about? Different styles, different teams, different states. Like, it is a great time. You know, any tournament's a great experience for an athlete and a coach. So, you know, being able to have your scout on, you know, team from Sydney plus a team from Adelaide plus who you play every second week in Melbourne, like, you know, it is always a good event, the Classic.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And, I mean, you touched on a little bit while we were talking about this, the coach welfare side of things is a really big, and that's probably a podcast on itself down the track at some point. But do make sure you look after yourself over that weekend. It's the basic stuff. As you said, don't live on coffee and the caffeinated drinks, because that crash will be very real at the end of it.
Coffee and a chockey.
You know, you do need to get downtime away from stadiums as well. Like, if, for example, the Classics here at State Basketball Centre next weekend, great time to get out. Like, I know we all want to stick around and watch games as well, but maybe sometimes you need to finish your game and go out for a little while just to get away from basketball and constantly being around and just freshen yourself up. You know, go for a walk. There's plenty of things to do in the area. Just get out and get a little bit of a break before you get back in, because the last thing you want to do is not have left the stadium, still be in a headspace from your game, and then roll into the next game and you're still in that mindset. You know, things
going. If you are fortunate enough to have assistant coaches with you, let them do the scout.
Yep.
You know, like, you can do the finer detail later, but you sitting in the stadium all day and then, you know, not getting that little bit of downtime can be more detrimental to your group than a positive impact. So, you know, all those sorts of things in tournaments is tough. You know, like, you just got to be able to figure out, where's my best impact? What do I need to figure out best for the opposition? And then just hone in on those couple key little areas.
Very good.
Absolutely.
Well said.
That pretty much runs us out of topics today. So
mid-season review complete.
Hopefully someone's got something out of that and we didn't just waffle on for 50-odd minutes about nothing. And we'll see how it goes. Split kicking extra this week. So the split is a real easy one.
Nope.
Zep, you're coaching the Cavs. You are Tyronn Lue. You've just been crossed over by Iverson and stepped over. How are you going to beat the Warriors? Justin, you are Steve Kerr. You have an arsenal at your disposal.
Can shoot like him.
How are you going to beat the Cavs? Zep, you can go first.
Robbie, good to see you've done your job this week and provided a split that is not going to jeopardise Justin and my job and standing as the coaches here, mate. Well done, thank you. Really good topic. Robbie, there is a gentleman for the Cleveland Cavaliers. His name is LeBron James. Okay. I've always had this kind of thought about LeBron. Fantastic player. Downhill. Hard to stop.
Glad you figured that part out.
Hard to stop. But I do think that he would be an absolute handful if he got a handful of touches on the post every quarter. And just made plays from the post. He's going to force Durant into some fouls. You got to defend the post. You can pass out of the post. It just gives the defense a different look. So my first play as T. Lou is we're sending LeBron to the block, Robbie. The second part of my newly acquired role, Robbie, is that these other cats. What are the names? Hood, Clarkson. These boys that we acquired mid-season.
Do they play?
I need something, boys. So when LeBron does go to the post and he attracts a double team, we need some guys that are ready and willing to step up and knock some shots down. Defensively, we'll play a little bit of defense this series as well, Robbie.
Solid plan.
We're still going? A little bit of defense this series. We have to take away rhythm contested uncontested threes. So chase that ball off the line, carry a hand, make them put the ball to the floor. Okay, Robbie? And the last one, all right, as my role at T. Lou. Now, if Tyron's listening, I'll give you my number afterwards. But the Warriors have made a living on these little 4 minute 15 to 2 runs. Cannot let a 15 to 2 run in 4 minutes at the end of the second quarter, start of the third, you cannot let this happen. So we need to be unbelievably engaged into when we're on the floor at all times. That cannot happen. Robbie,
good job.
7-game win, LeBron. Yeah,
clearly not going for 24 seconds anymore.
Well, it would appear not. It used to be.
It was a minute, wasn't it?
It was a minute, but you spend most of your time waffling on about something else. What do you got, Justin?
Four good points right there.
All right, so Steve Kerr of the Warriors. Kind of touched on this a little bit earlier. I'd actually be looking more at our group versus Cleveland at this point in time. Quickly on the defensive side for Cleveland, contested shots. We'll let LeBron have his. We'll make someone else beat us. All right, like nothing uncontested. If he's rolling down into the post, we'll send a double team. We'll get him to kick it back out.
Good luck.
We'll force that into a contested game. Sustained pressure at the defensive end. He's already given me the answer. We're going to have our moment where we blow this thing out just through sustained pressure.
No.
Offensively, though, is we're where engaged. It's at. And to me, the biggest part is ball movement, paint touches, shots in rhythm. If we can keep consistently doing those three things, ball movement, forcing as many long closeouts as we can. Once it gets to LeBron's closeout, he's not closing out anyway. So that guy will be wide open.
We just spoke before about coaching and talking about other players. Don't talk about my guys.
Really, it's going to come down to, can we keep rhythm shots in the game? When the Warriors keep rhythm shots and don't break out of their system, that's when they're super effective. So again, right now in practice environment, that's what we're really looking at. Get some good downhill movement, get the ball kicked out, get some movement again, and I'm pretty confident we'd be in good shape.
Well done, Robbie. Good topic.
Thanks.
Good topic.
Yeah. Every now and again. I've still got Warriors, personally. Mike's argument was not as compelling as he maybe thought it was, yeah, but mate. That's okay. I think you'll take him to seven, like if that makes you feel any better.
Winning in seven,
yeah,
Roberto.
I think we'll take him at seven. Kick, Mike, that's you.
The kick, Robbie. Interesting. Yesterday, The Ringer do a great job in sports journalism. An article about the Philadelphia 76ers. I guess, what was he? President of basketball operations / GM / bit of everything. Brian Colangelo. Rolling around with 5 burner Twitter accounts. Robbie, for those that don't know Twitter,
is this proven?
A burner,
alleged.
A burner account, Robbie, is an account that's not really yours. It might be just the undercover
Michael Zeppel account. I'm not sure if it's actually tweeted anything ever, but it might just be a touch controversial. What are your burner accounts?
Can't let that one under, Robbie. Can't let you know that one, Robbie. But it's just interesting that if the guy that's, you know, essentially the guy at the top of the organization is rolling around, allegedly, Robbie, we don't want this pod taken down, allegedly has 5 accounts slandering his players and staff and recruiting process, whatever it is, that's just a really interesting one. And I don't understand why you would even do that, Robbie.
No, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I think it's probably relevant where this is probably coming back to the coaching side of things is, just a reminder, be very careful about what you post on social media.
Absolutely.
Are you helping the game? Are you hurting the game? Don't be sitting there ragging on players or referees or anything like that. Use your social media for good. Promote the game.
That's for me that I don't understand in this whole thing is, what is the benefit?
Yeah, I can't get my head around it.
What are you going to gain from doing this? And it's interesting because I know Spurs culture was, if any employee was found on any forum, then they were basically dismissed. Like, that was not tolerated. And I'm a big believer of that. Like, you know, chat forums are going to be things where it's only negative, not, there's not a lot of positive that comes out of that. So, you know, that culture that Brett Brown came from, I can only think what he's thinking about. And good on him for getting a 3-year extension, you know, all the whispers about, you know, it's time to change the coach. It's like, well, come on, man. Like, he's just dealt with 4 years building this thing, and then now give the man a chance. But, that it'll be interesting times to see what really occurs. But should have all those NBA GMs really thinking about how they operate.
Led some pretty good Twitter chats as well between like Daryl Morey, Mark Cuban jumped on there as well. It's a pretty good Twitter exchange from those guys about it all as well. But and you did touch on the extra there, Justin. Obviously, Brett Brown's extension for 3 years is fantastic. It's great that a guy that's come through the basketball system in Australia has been rewarded for putting up with some pretty average teams and a process that certainly didn't help his win-loss record, but he stuck with.
To go full circle in some of this stuff, like I've spent some time with Brett, and you talk about the motivation. That guy is motivated for every session of every day, brings the energy, and that's something that when I first saw that, I thought, that's who you've got to be as a coach. Yeah. And you can only think about the challenges he's had over the last few years where you'd be thinking, I've got to go coach these Muppets today, but you know, he turns up, gets it done, and now the process is taking care of itself, to use the pun. So, that's going back to that motivation thing. There's an example right there.
Absolutely. I mean, the extra that's obvious is it's fantastic to have you back with us, Justin. It just wasn't the same last week without you. You know, it's great to have you back. You know?
No, appreciate it, boys. Contributing. Sorry to let the boys down. I did think that Wednesday night when I was messaging that I'd be all right, and then derailed. But no, good to be back, and hopefully we can get an exciting guest back on next week, which we think we'll have.
Hopefully we will be accepting applications for Justin's spot while he goes over to Worlds. We may need to replace him with someone, so by all means, if you'd like to jump on the pod,
I was going to offer to fly you guys over, but now that's after last week's tweet, that's done.
Yeah, it seems fair enough, but that's it for us this week. Obviously, thanks for jumping in and listening. If we've touched on anything that you need more information about or want to discuss further, please do so on Twitter. You won't find Mike, you might find his burner account.
Five of them.
Michael Zell. You can get Justin on at jshuler15 and me at Rob Calder. Thanks very much for jumping in, guys, and we'll catch everyone next week.